Welcome to Fire Engineering Podcasts, where each day you'll hear a variety of voices speaking on timely topics facing the American Fire Service. The best way to keep up with fire engineering is via our free daily e-newsletter. Learn more at fireengineering.com/e-newsletter.
Hello, everybody. This is Joe Pernesti, and in their own words on Fire Engineering, Blog Talk Radio. Today, we're going to talk about, well, I guess you could call it three words. It's really one word repeated, and it's a dreaded one, Mayday, Mayday, Mayday. And our guest today, if you're unaware, you shouldn't be if you're a Fire Engineering fan, has a weekly column called Mayday Mondays, and it is one that I thoroughly enjoy. I collect them, I distribute them, and they are really some good, quick pieces of information. And before we get started, as always, I want to thank the folks at Fire Engineering, Bobby Halden, and those that have allowed me to get inside our authors a little bit more and see what they're thinking and relay that to you, to the reader. So today we have Chief Tony Carroll of the District of Columbia Fire Department. Chief, thank you. I really appreciate it. I know you're busy. If you would, tell our listeners a little bit about yourself.
Good. Thanks, Joe. It's great to have you call me up and get this out. I do have lots that I would like to talk about with the Mayday Mondays, but about me, let's see, I am currently a battalion fire chief with the District of Columbia Fire Department, in charge of Battalion 2, which if you know anything about D.C., we are on the east side of the Capitol from Capitol Hill east to Prince George's County, Maryland line. A lot of single family dwelling, a lot of houses, a lot of residential occupancies in there. A few high rise, not a whole lot, but mostly residential. I've been in the District of Columbia Fire Department. I just had my 28th anniversary in March, so 28 years. Before DC, I worked in the Alexandria, Virginia Fire Department for a couple of years, but all of it kind of goes back to a volunteer fire department. I'm a volunteer with the Occoquan, Woodbridge, and Lorton Volunteer Fire Department in Northern Virginia. I joined there when I was 15, and still try to give back there. It's tough with a lot of the other demands going on in life, but it's important, right? Because that's all where it all started. I have three kids. Yeah, I have three kids. I have a beautiful wife that we've been married 25 years. I got three kids, three daughters, 23, 19, and a 15-year-old daughter that, keep me busy and grounded as to what's important in the world. Right now, I'm trying to work on a man cave at a lake house I have to try and get away from the four women sometimes, but no, it's that's what I'm working on right now on my couple days off.
Hey, listen, you're talking to the right person here. I too have three daughters, a little older, and I will tell you, it does get a little easier once they get out of their teenage years. So just so you know, there's light at the end of the tunnel. Mine are 26, 24, and 21. So it gets better. All right. What prompted you? One of the things that I love about your column is that it's consistent and you put it out. So many times I've seen, myself included, you have a great idea. You go to the folks at Fire Engineering and say, hey, I got this great idea. And usually the bosses there are like, let's go with it. Bobby's very good with it. Hey, if it's good stuff, go with it. And you start out and you're full of spit and vinegar, and then it fades away. Yours has not. What's the drive there? What started the column? what drives you to do a Mayday Monday column?
I guess the time I've been on, and I'm sure you too, Joe, and I think anybody who's in the fire service and is really into the fire service and is out there meeting people, we all end up knowing someone who made the ultimate sacrifice. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's like, wow, that's a repeat. That's, we've seen that before, where it's like, come on, you wasted time. I continue to repeat some of these things over and over again. And I get stuck in that too, right? Where I don't remember that how someone died. So I think that's really what the drive is. Another thing too has kind of gotten with me since doing this stuff is that we all remember the big line of duty death stories, right? We got guys who have Charleston 9, we got Worcester 6, we got even Cherry Road. We had a couple guys die there. We have those major incidents that kind of people know. What gets lost sometimes are this one firefighter who died. Again, I think about this guy, a young volunteer in North Carolina who died. Is his story getting out there? Are we remembering that guy as motivation? And then seeing young guys coming in and repeating some of these same things that we try to get the message out. That's the tough part.
It's kind of cliche, but Vincent Dunn says in a lot of his literature that we don't ever invent new ways of getting hurt or dying. We don't, it's always the same thing. It's the same types of events. We're not inventing anything new. And that's why what I also love about your article and want to kind of dig a little deeper in is that command officers come and go. And, we always have a new group coming in, and that's what's so great is that you provide something that, okay, if this fire, this command officer or this firefighter has already seen it and read your information and went deeper, there's always a new crop coming in to get that information that didn't know about it. And you're right. We may remember the big ones, but in everyday USA, it's the smaller events that we probably see more and more. In my city, I don't have that many townhouses, but I do have a type three, lots of type threes that kind of like what took place with Sergeant John Carter in DC or in any other, that type of example of, okay, I got to study that. And you provide those in such great, quick, easy digest things. I want to ask you a little bit, your thoughts on, are we training our members and more importantly, our command officers? One thing that bothers me is that, and I use this example all the time, you're a station boss or you're in charge of a crew and you're looking at each other, or it's a volunteer part-time department, and you're like, what can we do for drill night? What can we do for drill night? And you go, well, let's just get the rip bag out. Let's just go get this magical bag that we think is going to save everybody and play with it, and that's our rip. I think that while we do that, we also fail, and those command officers or those officers forget or fail to train themselves in how to run a Mayday. I think there's a serious void in command officers training of themselves or having any kind of training, overall training on how to conduct yourself and conduct a Mayday. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I can see that. And I think that we've kind of got lulled into a false sense of security where just by the mere fact that we assign someone to the rapid intervention role, that we're automatically safe. Yeah. And that means that, oh yeah, I got a writ. Again, you know, a lot of our guys, and I see this in places where they have like companies that are specifically FAST or RIT approved, right? In some of these jurisdictions, not everybody can fill the role as a RIT. And that's a great a perception there that chief officers have, or those leadership has, that it's not an everybody job. I recently saw, and I use it in a couple classes, Dallas, Texas had a Mayday. It was a female captain, I can't remember her name. They got cut off by fire. Fortunately for Dallas, Texas, they used their USAR team, kind of like they're like a heavy rescue.
Yeah.
Those guys are the RIT team on the fire. So what are they going to do? They get to concentrate heavily on rapid intervention skills, how to rescue these guys. The everyday fire company can't, right? Was kind of what where this came was born out of. I'll dial it back because I didn't really go into that.
Sure,
But it really was born out of being, you know, a company officer, a lieutenant on a truck company, and knowing that, you know, we have several skills that we have to know, how to put ladders up, forcible entry, ventilation, you know, all those kinds of things. And then, of course, we're also assigned as a rapid intervention truck on a lot of fires. So in order to keep our skills sharp, I kind of divided up the calendar into these are the days we're going to drill on different things. Mondays just kind of ironically became how we did Maydays. A friend of mine at that time, he was involved in training, and they did flashover Fridays at our training school. He's like, why don't you call it Mayday Mondays? So that was it. Every Monday that I came to work, and in D.C., you know, we work a pretty good schedule. We work like 24/72s. So right. we work one day a month, right? We work one Monday a month, one Tuesday, one Wednesday. We work 7 to 8 days a month. So it worked out. Every month you're going to get a chance to go over RIT skills. That's how Mayday Monday was born. And it was it was just me doing my company. Then I got moved out of the truck, went to a rescue squad. There you have a lot of things, you know, again, special ops stuff. So again, Mondays we were going to concentrate on Mayday stuff. As I got promoted, went to different places, we kept doing it. Then I went to the safety office where there was a special ops battalion chief in the same firehouse. He was like, why don't you, you know, do it for the whole city? And I'm like, wow, you know, that's pretty cool. And I'm like, how can we reach out? And he was like, well, get into the email, get into, you know, the DC Fire Department Facebook page, you know, because all these young kids are on their phones. I'm like, yeah, this is a really good idea. So at that time, the risk management deputy or whoever I talked to, he was like, yeah, you know, we can send it out. Send it to me. So we started sending it out every Monday to our internal users, right? The guys who follow the Facebook page and sending it out in emails. So that got traction. Then it was like every Monday. It was like, wow, it went from one a month to four a month, right? It went from 12 to like 52. And that was really tough because I'd be on vacation. I'm like, oh man, tomorrow's Monday. I need to go do a Mayday Monday. So I talked to some other guys and they're like, we'll just dial it back to like, you know, once a month. Again, in my job and maybe in yours, right? You work, you work a Monday and be a good drill topic. Again, we do one Monday. So it would worked out. So I dialed it back to once a month. Then about that time, I saw Bobby, Chief Halton at the Congressional Fire Service Institute. And I told him about it. He was like, send it to me. So I sent it to him. And that's how we got hooked up with Peter at Fire Engineering. And that's kind of where it's gone. And now, I think it definitely has got some traction. I've been able to go to FDIC and speak a couple of years on the Mayday Monday stuff. Some other places who came and saw it. I went to some place in Canada outside of Toronto and gave a Mayday Monday talk there. So it's really it's kind of cool because there are people who are like waiting for the next edition.
And it just keeps
spreading. So then to answer your question, yes, I think that there is that void for officers who think, again, I've assigned the RIT, they're good. when maybe they don't, you know, they just think that they saw the company in their firehouse. Yeah, they just took the rip bag out the other day and they trained on it. They should be good. Where there's a lot more to it than just, you know, checking the box and the rip bag. It's a thought process, right? That has to be added to and thought about in training on a regular basis. It can't be once a year. It can probably be once a quarter, but it has to be something that we're thinking of.
When you look at, even if you just take into consideration your department, a large metropolitan department, in your travels and teaching, do we think line of duty deaths are down, but I also think that close calls are going up. I still think we're having more and more close calls. We may not have the fatalities, but we're having, you know, either the same amount or more close calls. So even though we discussed that the command officer part is lacking somewhat, do you think that our overall skills and our overall thought process of Maydays and RIT teams and that are getting better? So I guess my point is, John Smith coming out of the Fire Academy now has an idea of what RIT is. And whereas 20 years ago, or when you and I first came on, you know, no way. I mean, it wasn't even on the radar. So do you think that that part is making it easier to say, hey, listen, we need to train on this. We need to get in that, because coming out of the academy, these young firefighters probably for the last 20 years are saying, okay, they at least know what those letters mean. Do you find it easier now to begin the process of training because of that? Or is it always back to the drawing board?
That's a tough one. I think that what I've seen is it's kind of the same thing, right? It's the same training. When it first kind of became the new thing out, the fire service, is, you know, we had a lot of stuff coming out from Chicago and the Illinois Fire Service Institute with RIT stuff, you know, the saving our own things. But I guess that's really the basis, and that's where the basics are. So I guess if we're getting that, the problem is I still see where, yeah, we got it. Yes. Yeah. Check. We've checked that box, and it's just not visited periodically. Right. It's not, again, I think there are departments we did it back in the academy, or even my own department. I remember we rolled out some new equipment back at, I want to say it was like 2009. And this was kind of the start of our back to basics training program, where we brought everybody down for a 4-hour class. And it introduced some of the new equipment that we bought. We bought RIT bags. We had worked with some companies, search ropes out, all that kind of stuff came in. We trained everybody. And then it was like years before we kind of visited that again. You know, so we had new people come in, and yes, they got the basis, they got the basic stuff in recruit school, but they didn't get that 4-hour or more in-depth thing that we did in 09. So it's just, I don't think it's on people's calendar. And that's what frustrates me even from my job, is that, I think it's great. I hear you're using the Mayday Monday stuff that comes out. I know a lot of the guys, you know, different places don't. They just, they see it come out and they think, oh, that's, you know, great. Thanks for doing that. But they don't necessarily use it. And I just want to know, all right, what are you doing? What are you doing to keep your people thinking about the RIT thing? You know, and again, you don't have to use my Mayday Monday stuff. I think it's easy, but if you want to do something else, that's great. But at least, you know, during your monthly training stuff, when are you reviewing your RIT policies, your basic skills, call it a Mayday? As far as line of duty deaths down, I think that I do think that the emphasis of training over the last few years
the firefighter, what do we, Bill of Rights thing that came out. All those things have definitely led to line of duty deaths down. The close calls being up, I think that kind of goes with our mission creep, you know, where everything, where we are jacks of all trades, or jack of all trades, right? We're not, we're just so far away from our basic mission. And I think that's what's kind of getting us the close calls.
You yourself had a close call, and if you would take us back a little bit, just being a student of the job, I collect a lot of articles, read a lot of articles, and did see, and in seeing one of your classes, that you did have a close call when you were an officer, a younger member of the department. If you would, if you don't mind, if you could talk a little bit about that, what took place, and if it affected your thoughts or your training or your overall thought process on being a DC battalion chief.
Yeah. So back, it was January 11th of 2005. I was a truck company in one of our Capitol Hill firehouses. It was right around dinner time, like 5:30 in the afternoon. We got sent to a building that we go to pretty regular, you know, 11 story, residential apartment building for odor of smoke. I pride myself in always, you know, not being complacent, but again, things add up, right? 5:30 in the afternoon, 5:30 in the afternoon, a residential apartment building, odor of smoke. Sounds like food on the stove. So we're going out. The first new engine is only a couple of blocks away. They mark on the scene. They had fire showing on the second floor. The call originally came out as odor of smoke on the 11th. But then he gets there, they have fire showing on the second floor. It's like, oh my, that's what kind of changes things up. So we get there. We were first new truck then, due to construction going on. And, you know, the other truck that's normally first due was relocated for a while. So we were first due truck. We get off the truck, and sure enough, you can look up. It was where we parked. It was right in front of us, the fire apartment was. And you could see fire conditions. We go inside, go up to the second floor, and conditions weren't that bad, but then it seemed like it changed pretty quick, right? I remember there was in the stairwell, there was smoke about shoulder level. And then when we got into the hallway, it changed pretty bad to smoke from top to bottom. So inside truck crew on a high rise in DC is kind of searching, helping with the attack company. Once they locate the fire, then we'll, you know, open things up for them. So we went into an apartment for a quick search, came out. And I remember when we came out, we jumped over the hose line, and they were taking a beating. That hose line looked like it was like as big as my pinky, because they were definitely taking a beating. They did get an upper hand on the fire, but we jumped over the hose line, went to the next door, which I thought was an apartment, and you know, I looked inside. I can tell you now, I think I saw furniture, and I went into the apartment. It happened to be the open elevator hoistway door was blown off, and I went in. I fell about 35 feet. There was we were on the second floor. These were like 11 foot stories, right? And there was two sub basements. So I fell like 35 feet into the elevator pit. Fortunately, I broke L2 vertebra and my fifth metatarsal on my left foot and one rib. So the rescue was pretty quick. They sent down some of the rescue companies, went down, the fire went to a second alarm. So the resources were there. They pulled me out, and I was, you know, transported to local hospital. I think I was there for like 9 days, because I came out on inauguration day of 06. And then it was, you know, like seven month recovery, and I came back to that truck company again in August of that year of 05. So
Yeah, I definitely say that kind of put things in perspective. You know, I thought that I was a pretty well-rounded, pretty good firefighter. But, you know, that building, which we had gone to several times for nuisance alarms, right? You go there for your foot of the stove, you go there for your elevators, that kind of thing. I guess I didn't know it that well. And, you know, again, you teach people, you know, make sure there's a floor in front of you before you cross thresholds and stuff. And I didn't do that there. So, I mean, there, you know, you take things for granted. So that was probably a learning thing, was don't take things for granted. Know the buildings that we're responding to. I guess that's kind of the stuff that I, you know, quickly comes to mind that you think of. And then as you move on from that, you know, that was 15 years ago. As you move on from this thing, what can you learn from it? And what can you pass on? So again, you know, it's not just about the fire. It's also about the buildings that we respond to. Know those, you know, make sure members take advantage of their opportunity when they get into these buildings, that they go the extra mile and don't just go there for the medical run and then leave. When they go there for a medical run, you know, after you turn the patient over to the transport unit, go back inside and look at where the stairwells are. Look at the layouts of the floors. Know where the elevator banks are, you know, that kind of thing. You know, make sure you have good firefighter intelligence on the buildings that you're going to go to a lot, because things like this can happen. Ultimately, you know, when I look back, it was just a broken bone, and I was very lucky. You can't just not think about it. I mean, you have to use it. For me, again, I think, you know, it kind of humbles you as far as, you know, you're into this job, and I've been doing it for a while. We were doing a lot of runs, a lot of good fires where I was at that truck. So you think you're pretty good, but you know, these things can kind of reach out to you and show you that don't settle on your laurels. You know, you have to stay into this job.
Wow. You know, okay. As we finish up, I'm going to ask your opinion on, for our listeners, that when we talk Maydays, we talk, you know, these emergency events, couple things coming to mind, and I really love to have your opinion for not only me but more importantly our listeners. But there's a study or an online, it's called the Mayday Project, and the gentleman who wrote it or does it keeps up on it, and it's wonderful pieces of information he's done. Don Abbott is his name, and he's done all kinds of work in gathering information from Maydays. But two of the things that have come out, or that I've gotten out of it, is number one, Maydays, his data is showing that Maydays are being handled or cleared or taken care of by crews already inside. What are your thoughts on that? Are you seeing that in your studies or in your experiences, that when a Mayday is going out, that the crews that are inside are actually the ones, if it's going to be successful and you're going to save a fireman or get him or her out of trouble, it's happening from the crews that are inside. Would you concur on that? And just your thoughts a little bit on that, for the Maydays.
Yeah, I think what he's done there with the Project Mayday and a lot of these like grassroots things, right? Like there's a firefighter rescue survey that, guys kind of out Midwest have done, out West and stuff have done, which is really good stuff. But Don's work with the Mayday Project is really good. And I think that is a great point that we've realized from this. And I've used it, you know, some of my stuff. And even recently we had a change in our SOGs in the DC Fire Department a few years ago. And they looked at that. They kind of put that forefront in our minds, because we had a very good process, right? If a Mayday comes in, these are the things you're going to do. Unfortunately, it kind of was big, right? If the word Mayday was said, that launches us down this path that's tough to kind of, kind of recover back to a basic fire ground if once the Mayday is cleared. So, you know, you had, you know, you stop all radio traffic, you have everybody that's operating in the fire ground changes their radio frequencies. You know, we established then a RIT branch and maybe a firefighting branch to take care of the ICS, and somebody's still in charge of the fire and somebody else is in charge of the Mayday. And, you know, again, with the training and stuff like that, you realize that, wow, that kind of takes us, that there's a lot of stuff going on there while we're waiting for that RIT crew, the rapid intervention group to get activated and get moved in. You know, what's going on with the Mayday member while all this is happening? And we did see that a lot of the Maydays, and there's not very many, right? We don't have a whole lot of evidence-based research for this, but right, a lot of them can be cleared by people in the close proximity. So that was highlighted in our SOG, in our guidelines, again, from the Project Mayday stuff, from our own history, that, look, you know, before we launch us down this path that might be tough to clear and come back from, let's just do a quick, you know, review of the units on the same floor, you know, who are operating in the close vicinity, and see if they see that this member in trouble before we do this. So yes, I think that what Don did there is great, good stuff. And then, you know, we've adjusted our guidelines, and I'm sure other places have as well. I mean, you know, I like that Phoenix idea where they're on deck.
Yeah.
Right. So that you got a company who's fighting the fire, and then the resources they're available for a couple of things, right? They're available to relieve the unit that's on the end of the hose line, or they're available there in case somebody in the end of the hose line has trouble. Because we've seen, right, in this research, in this grassroots stuff, that the people who are the closest in proximity might have the best chance of fixing this problem, and they're there. So I like that idea. I mean, the on deck idea, or having some resources available on a fire floor, you know, so that they can quickly engage and fix a problem or find a member or, you know, get us back to where we need to be on the regular priorities of the fire ground and not have to rescue somebody.
For our listeners, quickly on deck, what that means is Phoenix is kind of started. It started in Phoenix, but if you're if you certainly know what this means if you have taken any kind of blue card command training, but those that are listening that aren't aware, it's basically a crew that is it's not in, they're not in staging at their truck, they're not down the street, they're an uncommitted crew that is right there, to paraphrase or to make a long story short, that they're an uncommitted crew that is near the A side or the front of the building that is ready to go to work. Chief, one of the other things that I would love for your opinion on, we talked the Maydays and the Mayday Project Mayday, is switching channels. Love your input and your thought on this. And for most of our listeners, you know, I'm in charge I'm a platoon chief who has in my city only 14 people on duty. And when I have a Mayday, you know, Project Mayday, another thing on there says that the Maydays occur relatively quickly, within the first 20 minutes. And I've always thought, why not do your training utilizing your information that you give out, based on what you would have realistically on the scene of an emergency in your town in 20 minutes. So in my town, first 20 minutes, I got 14 people. Maybe if mutual aid arrives quickly, 17 to 20. But that's my first part of my mutual aid. But for you, 20 minutes in DC is a lot more. But my point is your thoughts on switching channels. And I'm a believer that, and along with the Project Mayday and many others, we changed our procedures to not change channels. Because when we go back, and we talked earlier about command and training command officers, I just don't think it's realistic to train a command officer who's the only command officer on scene to be able to juggle all these channels and effectively save somebody's life. The old training was, okay, command and the person in trouble stay on the same channel. Everybody else switches. Well, I think since we've started training and doing more, that we've realized that doesn't work. Your thoughts on that, and you know, have you actually trained on it, or God forbid, had a mayday you yourself have been running to where maybe that didn't work and you're better off staying on the same channel?
No, I haven't. I mean, I've trained on that where we've, you know, had some simulation stuff. We've had mayday incidents in the training so we could practice that. I think it would be crazy. We get, I'm very lucky. I get 40 people on a first alarm assignment, whether it's a, you know, a single family dwelling detached, or whether it's a, you know, a 12, 13 story residential high rise. We send five engines, two trucks, two chiefs and a rescue squad for 40 people. And they're all going to be there within 7-8 minutes. So mm-hmm. I'm lucky with that. But with that though, I can't imagine. I mean, I think it would be it's a good idea. It's a good idea because we have a lot of talking on our fire ground frequency. So it's a great idea. But I think in practicality, it's not very practical. Yeah. So I believe you're right, and I totally understand what you're getting at. Where you know you've only got 14 people there. If you start this changing channel thing, who's going to be on the other channel? We talk about, and I also have the luxury of having a driver as my chief's aide. So you know he's there. He could run the fire ground on the fire ground channel. And then, you know, my idea is I would switch with the mayday, kind of communicate with that mayday guy. Mm-hmm. But right now, like I told you, like our guidelines are kind of like, hey, see if you can settle it with the units who are closest by before you need to go down this path of changing channels. It's still there. It's still there that the changing channel is an option. But yeah, I think one of the things that we need to do is do that, like you said, train with our 40 people, you know, in a real life kind of fire ground scenario, and then see how it's going to work out. We typically do, you know, 8 or 9 officers together in a simulation to practice that, and that can even become tough for those 8 or 9 officers who are, you know, used to using a radio. I can't imagine what it would be like with the 40 people doing the changing the channel thing and still, you know, functioning on the fire ground. So I think you're right. I think that the idea of changing channels, is a good idea because your vision is that you're going to have a clear channel to talk. But practically, I don't think it's going to work. So, again, we've emphasized, see if you can settle it on the same fire ground channel with the units in close proximity to the mayday member before you have to do all the other stuff.
As we finish this, you know, these are things that, you know, this subject we can talk forever on. But the main focus here is for our listeners is that I think what I wanted, and I got what I wanted out of Chief Carroll, is that I wanted our listeners to hear from the author themselves. This is the whole point of why Chief Halton has allowed, and Fire Engineering has allowed me to kind of be the host of this, and is that the listeners get to actually hear, in their own words, someone who's experienced a mayday himself, and is why did you write this? Why are you doing this? And he's hit a home run. And again, for our listeners, get out, search Chief Carroll, Tony Carroll's name, get his information, print it out, and start something. We're all sitting around our houses. We are taping this in the middle of a pandemic, and it is April 20th, 2020. So we all know that we are in the middle of a pandemic, and many officers or in their house or in their firehouses, training might have been suspended. Well, you know what? Go to a computer. If you're listening to this, research this stuff and get it out. Chief, I want to thank you. And if anybody would like to contact you or, you know, maybe get some more information on the Mayday Mondays, how can they get a hold of you?
I'm on the social media stuff. I have a Facebook page. I have a Twitter page. If you're if you follow Fire Engineering on any of those, then they'll send out the information. You know, when they send out the Mayday Monday, that first Monday of the month, you can link to that.
Okay.
I could be happy to give you my email address, but that would take up another few minutes.
That's good. So your information is on there. So for our readers, if you go to the Mayday Monday, there's contact info for Chief Carroll there. Chief, anything final that you would like to add before we close up on this podcast?
Yes. The ideas behind some of these things, again, it started as a practical drills for my members, and we wanted to get those practical ideas out for firefighters. Hopefully you've seen, at least in this year, in 2020, the first couple of months, and especially right around March, because March is our February, because February is Heart Health Month, that this year we've kind of hit hard on the cardiac stuff. I've heard, you hear the social media guys and the fire service talk about, you know, when are we going to train on what's really killing firefighters? Well, I'll do it. Let's do it. Let's train on what's really killing firefighters. And what's really killing firefighters is our health, right?
Yeah.
The fact that we don't necessarily take care of ourselves, and we can always say, well, they don't give me time to work out at work. Yeah. Well, my job, I mean, we got 3 days off and they pay us a pretty handsome sum. So you have time to get your body right. And it's not only going to benefit you on the fire ground, but if your body's right, you can enjoy retirement. So I really think that's where a lot of our focus needs to be, is the health of our firefighters. We're seeing now, right, that if you have underlying health issues, what the COVID, the coronavirus is attacking those underlying health, those with compromised systems.
Yeah.
So you being healthy is not only going to help you on the fire job, but it'll help you off the fire job with those three great girls I got, right? Me hanging out with them, and it's going to help me with retirement, because believe it or not, I can't believe it, I'm looking, you know, for retirement, and I want to get out and enjoy it. So I think that the Mayday stuff, the below grade rescues, right, jumping out a window, coming down a ladder, those are all sexy and cool. But it has to start with a healthy body.
Chief, excellent stuff. I want to thank you, and I appreciate you taking the time. Please be safe and have a good day.